Welcome to the Saints Happy Hour Podcast with host Ralph Malbro and featuring bloggers Andrew Juge of SaintsNation.com, Kevin Held of The Team Drops the Ball, and Dave Cariello of Canal Street Chronicles. This podcast is nothing but serious football talk and hardcore analysis.
Which four of you would survive the longest in the zombie apocalypse, and in which order would you die?
Well, Ralph, no offense, you're going first.
Oh, definitely. No.
The zombies would smell Dave's sugar blood and target him.
They'd get his...
I don't even have a joke, Dave smells like nougat.
Now here's your host, Ralph Malbro.
Welcome to the Saints Happy Hour Podcast. As always, we are sponsored by the Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You only have 1 week of LSU and Saints football left, so if you got to go somewhere to watch the game, go to the Pelican House. They have 136 draft beers, they have a 50-foot TV, they have a great late-night menu, they have all kinds of fun stuff for the LSU bowl game when they play Louisville, and you got the Saints on Sunday. Man, if you got to get that last, go out and get the full football experience, go to the Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You should support them because they support us. All right, the Saints are 7-8.
Woo!
Merry Christmas. And to top it off, they had a Christmas miracle. Jarvis Byrd had 2 interceptions. Which was
magnificent. I missed that.
Which was
doubled his career total.
And
with the Saints,
he almost took one to the house. Like that would have ended. That would have ended humanity, I think, or at least for certain, broke Saints Twitter. Dave, I'll start with you. You were very upset that you had to miss the two Byrd interceptions because of Christmas obligations.
I was just of all the games that I mean, I went to the game. I was there. I left very early. I left probably with like 7 minutes to go in the first quarter. I was getting alerts on my phone. I left to go to Mass with my family, and so I kept getting alerts on my phone saying about the Byrd interceptions, and I was just so upset that.
You were going to walk out of church.
Home,
it was going to be
the apocalypse. When I got home, he had a second one. Yeah, I was just, you know, of all the games that I had to miss, I mean, yeah, that's like a big one. And by the way, Ralph, your
Sunday ticket?
It doesn't work when you're in the market that you're trying to watch.
Oh, yeah. Dope. Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's fine.
Forgot about that little hitch. People.
I wouldn't have been able to... I wouldn't have been able to watch it anyway, but I did try before I left for the game, and it wouldn't work.
You could watch the Red Zone channel. That's about as close as you can get.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, the Saints sucked balls against Tampa three weeks ago, right?
And 2 weeks ago,
And on Twitter today, people were fighting, yelling at Nick Underhill and yelling at me because they were like, 30 rushes! When the Saints rush for 30, runs the ball 30 times, blah, 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 blah. And I hate the 30 rushes because I feel like it simplifies everything. But
my problem with it is that if you're looking at the box score at the end of the day and it's, oh, look, they rushed more than 30 times, the chances are that the Saints were ahead early on, or they had a healthy lead in the fourth quarter and probably just rushed the ball a bunch of times late in the game to kill clock. You can't just look at you can't if you're going to look at that, if you're going to be concerned with how many times they rush it and how it always leads to success, I would think you would need to look at first half rushing attempts only.
Yeah.
They would need to rush the ball a more amount of times in the first half than normal and see whether that led to more wins or not.
I like Mike Lombardi's stat that's better is 55, which is 55 combined rushes and completed passes. You win like 70% of the time. But Andrew, like, what did you watch when you rewatched the tape? What did they do, like, scheme-wise and different things that made the game different, or did they just block better and they had Unger and it's that simple?
No, I mean, I think the main thing is it's how you start. It's really the first quarter. You know, I think they try to run against Tampa and they go three and out in their first two series and they're down two scores right away.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't forget Ingram was hurt in that game. Yeah. He had the toe issue and Sean Payton doesn't really trust Tim Hightower. You know, I think he's fine giving him the ball, but third and two, critical play where they need a first down. You know, a lot of times they're trusting Ingram when he's healthy in that situation.
And Hightower's
kind of
bad.
Trusting Hightower,
and Hightower's
so they're
usually throwing. Hightower's kind of bad in short yardage, it seems to me.
He hasn't been great this year, yeah. So I think part of it's just you get on a roll on your opening drive, boom, you're up 7-0, and yeah, Tampa comes back and makes it 7-7, but it was never out of hand early. They weren't down multiple scores. Mark Ingram was healthy. You know, he was kind of getting it going early. And so, you know, how the game starts dictates so much of how it's going to play out from there. Now, I do think when the Saints get down two scores quickly, I do think sometimes Peyton has a tendency to abandon the run maybe quicker than he should. And I think there is something to be said for kind of being relentless with it and saying, no, like, we have to try. Because I think Tampa in the last game was so good at getting pressure with four that they were just dropping seven in coverage, and that was a front that you really could run on. The problem is the Saints, A, didn't have their best back healthy, and B, the game just played out right into Tampa's hands. So I think it was different this time because the Saints were in a position where the playbook could be open. The running game was working well early, which kind of set up some of those deep shots that they took to Cooks, et cetera.
Yeah. And also, too, the one thing in the Tampa game, though, is they fell behind two scores in the first game, but they didn't. They could have. I felt like they could have stuck with it more, but like you said,
yeah,
it was a case of Sean Payton's like, I don't really trust Hightower. That's why, we'll get to that later, that's why I think the Saints need more running backs. But
yeah, I think he's fine. I mean, it's not like he doesn't like Hightower, but I'm just saying when you're down two scores early and you don't, your defense isn't great, I think the Saints do feel like, well, if we go three and out again and give up another score, this game's probably over. Like, when you get down three scores, it's pretty rare to come back and win in the NFL. So I think he's feeling that pressure. And when it's a critical third down and he's like, I can pick between either the ball in Hightower's hands or Drew Brees' hands, my $100 million first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback, it's an easy decision. So that's not a diss at Hightower. It's just like, you know, a third and one with down two scores, it's basically do or die.
So, Dave, how was that atmosphere at the Dome for the time that you were
well,
there?
I feel like I feel like I should be able to answer that question a lot better than
because you were there the whole game, right?
So. Yeah, I was there the whole game.
Let me ask you this, Andrew. Did it fill up anymore? Because I mean, there were obviously definitely a lot of empty seats, and I'm not surprised.
There was, I was expecting it. I mean, I saw on StubHub that it was like $4 a ticket or something to get in the stadium right before kickoff. So
it felt like
2004
all over again.
Yeah, I was expecting it to be horrible. You know, it was like three quarters full at kickoff, and yeah. I agree with Dave that it kind of thinned out a little bit. But you know, fortunately, I think it. You know, if the Saints had gone down two scores early, I really think the stadium would have been half empty by the end of the first quarter, but because I really feel like people were itching to leave. But it turned out to be an exciting game, and I would say that it's probably of the Sean Payton era one of the lamest crowds I've ever seen. But it was still three quarters full. It was still an entertaining game, and it was fun. So I think from that perspective, like, it could have been so much worse.
Yeah, I mean,
it wasn't that bad. It was. You know, by New Orleans standards, I mean, I've been to so many games where it's nuts from first quarter to fourth and the stadium is jam-packed, no empty seats. So, like, this felt like somewhere between that and a preseason game, somewhere in the middle between the two.
When a preseason game. But so back to the sort of the running back issue before we get to the defense. Mark Ingram, your boyfriend, Dave, has been sort of nicked up this year. But if he gets 60 yards, he gets 1,000, right? If he can get to 60 against Atlanta, which is, I think...
By the way, I did text you guys before the game, and I said that I had a feeling he was going to have a a big game.
Yeah, because his daughter's birthday, right?
Oh yeah, and he was
Yeah.
So I feel like the Saints, it's not like one of their critical needs, but it is kind of higher than people realize at running back. Like I feel like I don't want to go into next year with Ingram and Hightower as the two number one backs. I'm fine with Ingram, but I feel like they really, really need somebody better than Hightower. Am I wrong to think that, Dave?
No, I mean, it'd be great. It would be great to have a little extra firepower in the ground game. Not really sure how well Peyton would actually use it, but following our just most recent discussion. But I mean, you know, hopefully they're not going to spend a first round pick on it. Hopefully they can do what they've been pretty good at doing in the past, which is finding a running back in undrafted free agency. That would be the ideal situation.
Well, I mean, Andrew, I mean, I just feel like they need something because Mark Ingram, he always gets injured, and now he's starting to get to that age for running backs. What is his age now? 26, 27? I mean, he's starting to get to that age where, like, if God forbid they go into next year and Ingram is out for the year after, like, 3 weeks, like, having Tim Hightower and Lasko ain't going to cut it. Like, it's just not.
Yeah, I think but you'd be surprised, man. I mean, you look at Jay Ajayi. Like, I mean, he was a guy that was buried on Miami's depth chart, and you know, he gets a chance to play, and he blows up. So you never really know. Like, Lasko, you know, could be one of those guys where none of us really expect much out of him, and then, you know, a couple guys get injured, he's starting, and, you know, he's amazing. So I've seen that happen a lot of times with running backs. I mean, that guy Howard in Chicago has 1,000 yards, and no one really expected him to play much this year either. So, running back surprise you sometimes. I think a lot of it's about the play up front. I think just continuing to solidify the offensive line is key. But, yeah, I mean, I like Hightower. I really feel like I would like to see the Saints give him another one-year deal. But ideally, Hightower's a camp body. Like, he's your fourth or fifth running back, and if someone gets hurt, then yeah, he earns a roster spot and he probably helps you and does a fine job. But ideally, you know, he's competing against a younger guy that has more weapons and beats him out in training camp. So, look, this is all going to be a moot point when the Saints draft Leonard Fournette in the first round anyway. But
they might pick as low as 18 if they win Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't think Hightower can be the number two guy for the Saints. I mean, you know, he's got to be a three or four guy. I don't know really what's going to happen with running back because, you know, you feel like Lasko's probably a shoe-in to be on the team next year, but then, you know, Travers Cadet's kind of been so-so this year. I mean, he's got good hands, but, you know, Marcus Murphy, I think, is close to the end of the rope. So, you know, there's a lot of running backs on this team that I'm not that excited about.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. So, the offense, Dave, Michael Thomas was back to being awesome.
The one thing I was going to say real quick about Ingram is you're absolutely right, Ralph. The Saints just can't go into next year and assume they're going to get 16 games out of him, healthy games. So, they have to be in a position where they have one or two guys they feel good about.
I mean, he's never played 16 games, right? Ever.
No.
So, but this offense, Dave, Michael Thomas looked amazing again.
Not good enough to go to the Pro Bowl, though.
Well, no, but listen. If the players vote for the Pro Bowl, and listen, NFL players, they're great. They're a billion times better at football than other people, but that doesn't mean they know football. Okay. That's true. And to vote in Dak Prescott over Breeze is just idiotic. I mean, you know, I don't understand why quarterbacks get so much credit for win. I mean, we don't say Jari Evans is 172 with the Saints. You know? And I get that quarterback's important. I just feel like wins is one of those stats that's not really a great measurement, you know? But
that's the only reason Cam has an MVP.
Man, I was reading today that Carolina might, that Ron Rivera might fire like a bunch of people on the offensive staff, and including Mike Shula or David Shula, whoever the Shula is, that's the coordinator. But Dave, if you had to pick a non Drew Brees offensive MVP for the Saints, who would you pick?
A non Drew Brees offensive MVP?
MVP? Who would you pick?
I mean, you know, you started this whole topic talking about Michael Thomas. I mean, obviously he's had a great season. I would say maybe you could give him the Rookie of the Year award, and maybe you could give the offensive MVP. I like to pick, you know, guys that aren't really going to get picked. You got to go with somebody on, you know, like Max Unger. Like, you know, we've never said any one thing about Max Unger, and all season, and as a
we
center,
said the offensive line that, looked like garbage when he didn't play.
Right. And as a center, that's exactly what you want to happen. You don't even want to know he's there. So I'm going to go with Max Unger.
Andrew, who would you be your offensive MVP non Drew Brees?
Well, so yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we mentioned Mike Thomas, Brandon Cooks, and Mark Ingram both. Mark Ingram lately has been awesome. So I think those guys are all worthy. I think they've all three of those guys have played really well this year. But my pick would be Zach Strief. I think he's been rock solid at right tackle all year. I think he's had a couple bad games just with the elbow, but I thought he played well against Tampa again. And I kind of against all odds. Like, we were expecting, you know, we were thinking if there's one guy that really falls off this year, it's probably Strief. He's had the best year of his career.
Not only is, well, I mean, maybe he comes. I think the Saints, if he walks into Sean Payton's office and is like, dude, this is it, I'm done. Like, Sean Payton's going to be like, dude, you got to come back. Like, it, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, I think based on the interview in the locker room, that he had yesterday, I don't think he's leaving. I mean, he kind of made a comment like, yeah, this year's a little different from previous years in that I feel like we're kind of building a foundation, and he's just, and it was kind of in reference to Peyton, but he was like, I can't see how, you know, we're so close and we're enjoying each other so much and we're so tight in the locker room. I can't see Sean wanting to leave at this point. And I don't know. I took those comments to kind of mean he was probably coming back too.
Yeah. Dave, as we look at the defense, before we get to Atlanta and all the problems that the Falcons may present, I feel like this defense, man, they're second, like, they're going to have people that are playing a lot of snaps in this secondary that aren't going to be on this team next year. Like, B.W. Webb's not going to be on this team.
We hope.
Crawley's not going to be on this team.
We hope.
You know, hell, Sterling.
Why wouldn't they keep Crawley?
Well, I mean, if they add a couple people,
I mean, he would be great to have as a five or six corner.
Well, here's the thing, though, Andrew. If let's look at it. PJ Williams comes. Let's assume good health. So PJ Williams comes back healthy.
Yeah.
Bro comes back healthy. Let's see who else you got. Let's say they add a free agent corner.
Damian Swan. Are you going to say Damian Swan?
Yeah. Damian Swan.
I mean, you're assuming
can we
they
deal
get
in reality
all of training
here?
Camp and preseason with all of those guys healthy.
Well, the opening week.
I'm going to tell you right now. Ken Crawley's making this team next year.
So, but
because one of those guys you just mentioned will be done for the year before week one.
Man, I could. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying not the Swan whole year. So, but that gets you okay. So. I got Bro.
There was somebody else.
Kyle Wilson.
Sterling Moore.
It's Kyle Wilson. But two of them aren't going to be on the team. Like, either B.W. Webb. Well,
no,
Crawley,
you bring
Devontae
them all to
Harris,
camp, man.
Sterling Moore.
Bring
like,
them all to camp.
On the opening,
it'll work itself out.
On the opening day roster.
Saints corners drop like flies.
No, I say that.
I mean, seriously, bring in like 50 corners.
But here's
they're all you.
I get that.
Attrition will work itself out.
I get that, but you don't want B.W. Webb playing on this team next year, God willing.
No,
he had an
you
awesome
don't.
Game against the Bucks. He was like one of the best players on defense. Surprisingly, B.W. Webb was
he's
very
hit
good
or miss.
In that game.
hey, he's getting lots of very valuable experience. So it's good. So, you know,
here's the thing. Like, when you look at next year and you look at this team hopefully making a run, and we're saying, like, this is it for Peyton and Breeze, like, it's all in on next year.
All in, baby.
I want guys on the team that played the previous year. I don't want another season of throwing undrafted corners out there that have never played before, don't have experience, and get roasted. I mean, I want Ken Crawley out there and BWM and Sterling Moore. And you know, obviously you want better corners ahead in the pecking order. But if injuries happen, I would much rather have depth with the guys that played last year, know the system, know what Dennis Allen wants. So I think the fact that they're playing a lot of inexperienced guys or guys lower on the totem pole this year, it could serve to really benefit depth next year. And hopefully they get starters ahead of them that are better.
Well, I was just going to say that it speaks a lot to what Aaron Glenn and Dennis Allen have done. But on the case, me and Dave argued this last week, but I feel like I have Andrew with me, so now we're gonna come at Dave from both sides and double team him.
Oh, fuck this.
And
Pig roast.
Here's the thing. I don't care what it costs to re-sign Nick Fairley. They got to re-sign him. I don't care about the cost because I'm all in for 2017. I don't care about 2018 and 2019. If it takes 5 years, $60 million, I'm doing it, Andrew. Am I wrong? Or are you going to side with Dave?
Here's my thing.
Andrew is a very level-headed man. He's definitely going to side with me.
I think not only do you have to keep Fairley, you have to keep Bird, possibly Ellerby. I think when we finally – the Saints right now, I believe, are 25th in the league in defense. 25th is amazing. I mean, that's like amazing. Better than my wildest dreams, you know, based on how these last few years have gone.
Only two when times in the second finally, half that they allowed more than 25 points.
When you're finally starting to see signs of improvement, you can't go toss Bird and Fairley out the window and assume that you're going to get some new guy that comes in and replaces them and is just as good, no problem. We have to build from this. We can't have attrition and then expect that we're going to stay at 25. Fairley, arguably one of the best defenders on the team this year. I mean, he's not Cam Jordan, but he's played so well. There's no way they can let him go. He's an absolute must to bring back.
Listen up. I absolutely agree with you as far as, you know, we need to build off of what we've got going. But if you give Nick Fairley a long-term contract, what kind of production do you think you're going to get out of him?
I think that he will regress with a bigger contract, if I had to guess. I'll give you that.
Right.
I don't think you can afford not to re-sign him.
You can absolutely afford not to sign him. You can't. He's going to regress if you give him a multi-year deal.
Okay, so your defensive tackles are Tyler Davison and Sheldon Rankins. So what are you going to do next year when Sheldon Rankins breaks his leg again?
You can take whatever money you were going to piss away to pay Nick Fairley and go sign somebody else, another veteran free agent.
But who plays defensive tackle? That's what I want to know.
Somebody knew.
Much better the defense was this year? Most of it is because of the interior play, which has allowed them to stop the run.
You have two options here. Not pay Nick Fairley and let him walk, in which case he doesn't help your team. Or pay Nick Fairley a huge amount of money, let him play where he doesn't help the team. Fairly.
Here's the thing, though.
Where he doesn't help the team. So in both scenarios, he's not helping the fucking team.
I don't think.
But in your scenario, he just fucking sucks $30 million from your fucking salary cap.
Here's the thing. If the investment in Fairley blows up in the Saints' face, like that's a risk, and I recognize the risk because he is kind of an up and down player that has struggled with motivation.
Do the Saints have a good track record of these deals going well? Or do they have a good track record of these deals going bad?
Exactly. That's why you pay guys that have had success in your system already, as opposed to spending it on guys outside that you've never even seen in your system. Are you saying you trust the Saints more to spend it on a guy we don't even know anything about yet? How could you expect that to turn out better than Fairley, who's at least been on the Saints and done well in the system?
My opinion is based on everything I've ever seen from Nick Fairley, which is good on one-year contracts and not good on multi-year contracts.
Here's the thing.
I do not trust Nick Fairley. That's my main issue.
Here's the thing with Fairley. I'm all in for 2017. And even if he regresses from this year of really, really good, even if he regresses to just average, which is possible, it's still fine. Because
not worth it, then it's too expensive. It's too much money to pay for average. You can get average for much cheaper.
The Saints can't because
you know what else you can get for much cheaper?
Bad.
Dog shit play.
You can get Brandon Browner, defensive tackle version. You know?
Yeah.
You can
yeah.
get I mean, yep. Here's the thing. If 2017 is it. If the Saints don't make the playoffs in 2017, Breeze is gonna be gone. Peyton is going to be gone, and you're going to be hitting the reset button. And with as much salary cap has as the hit that they're going to take for Breeze leaving, paying Fairley $10 million, $11 million, and giving him
whatever,
it's not going to matter. It's like it's not going to matter because you're going to be going 4-12 in 2018. So no one gives a shit. So I don't want the Saints to go all in and let Fairley walk over $2 or $3 million and be like in the middle of the year the Saints are like 6-5 and be like. Man, if we had Fairley, who's playing great with this team over here, if they'd have just paid the extra $2 million, $3 million, the run defense would be so much better. It'd be just as good as it was last year.
If they let Fairley walk, they've got to spend a first or a second round pick on a defensive tackle to replace him. I don't want them to do that. They're too close.
But
they have too many holes, and they're too close.
Here's a question, though, that's fair for Dave. Is there a point, Andrew, where you cannot do it? Is there a monetary point that you cannot do? And I say that because you have, I think I read yesterday, they have five teams that have to spend, I think, $45 million or $50 million to get to the floor. So you have all these teams like Jacksonville, they have to spend the money to get to the floor.
You know what
I think Fairley wants to come back. He rooted for the Saints as a kid.
Yeah,
and I think he appreciates the fact that the Saints signed him. And you know, I remember the story. He gave up less money to come to New Orleans this offseason. He told his agent, like he kept asking him, "Hey, what have the Saints said?" So there's clear interest.
Yeah.
I think. I think he would potentially give the Saints a discount. If you're asking me, is there some price where it's just too much? Of course. It's like Fujita when he went to the Browns. The Saints
oh, my
back.
God.
It's like Goodwin when he went to the 49ers. I mean, I think sometimes teams just are desperate for a guy at that position and they overpay.
What's the number in your mind that'd be like, okay, that's too much?
I mean, you know, I think, again, it's the way they structure contracts these days, it's less about how much it is per year.
It's
more about how much they're guaranteeing.
Well,
how quickly they can hit the eject button.
How much is too much guarantee, then?
I don't know, man.
Dave, are you
look,
okay?
Here's my thing. No. If Nick Fairley is going to give us a discount, I would love him to give us a discount on the length of the contract. I'm okay with signing Fairley. If it's a 1 year contract. Now, obviously, that's not what he wants.
What about a two year deal where he gets paid a ton based on how well he played?
Possible. Nothing more than 2 years. Absolutely nothing more than 2 years. That's what's important to me as far as his contract. I wouldn't care if the Saints gave him $15 million, but it was just for 1 year. I would prefer that.
But if they give him a 3 year deal, the last year of a contract is always easy to get out of.
What is important is that Fairley's future is uncertain, and he needs to be hungry. We need to keep putting the carrot in front of the horse or whatever.
I think
he needs to be keep chasing
I
that. We don't want him to get fat.
I think Fairley would totally be open to a nice, sizable contract that rewards him for the year he just had, but is laden with incentives where, you know, if he hits five sacks on the year, he gets enormous bonuses.
I think
the Saints should structure it that way. I think he'd be down with that.
I think a fair contract for Fairley is, and Dave, before you have a coronary, let me get it all out. I think a fair contract for Fairley is 5 years, $60 million. But after one year, the Saints next offseason have to decide after they guarantee him.
Yeah, there's like a roster bonus
deal, like,
where they can
It's a 1 year deal for about $8 to $10 million, and next March the Saints have to decide, okay, we're paying you $8 million more or $9 million more, and the 4 years kick in. So that way, if Fairley, he goes, say he gets a sack and a half against Atlanta and he gets seven sacks, if he does that again next year, then the Saints either have to say, look, you did two awesome years back to back, we have to pay you like a almost Pro Bowl defensive tackle, or they can say, you know what, you had seven sacks, you got fat after we gave you $9 million guaranteed, you went back down to two, we're not picking up the option. So that's what I think that would be a really fair deal, like a got to pick up the option deal. But he's going to...
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, though, with the season that he's coming off of, I mean, his agent is going to be able to negotiate an enormous deal on the free market.
Dude,
So the lack of security of 1 year, it may not appeal to him. You know?
I
totally hear Dave. It's a concern of mine as well.
It's hard. I have no
idea. I think Fairley's matured a lot. I mean, everything I've read, you know, that he's changed as a person and a player over the years, and he's become more of a professional. But, you know, is that just because he's in a contract year, and does he regress back to the norm with a fat contract? I'm worried about it for sure. But again, like, I've seen what this defense looks like without Nick Fairley. And I just the Saints can't afford to go backwards. They just can't.
No, and they have
to take that risk.
Here's the thing, though, with Fairley, with his mom passing away, I wonder if the discount and staying here with the Saints is less appealing. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see. But Dave,
yeah.
I think if the Saints re-sign him, I think you're going to have a coronary, because I don't think it's going to be just a 1 year deal. I think it's going to be
no. I'm certain it's not. Every NFL player longs for the allure of a lengthy contract.
But I will say,
that's their security blanket.
I will say
that. But it's, again, guys, like, we can't attribute too much importance to, you know, the contract that Dave said. Like, I could totally see a 4 year, $57 million deal. But he's maybe not seeing year three of that contract, and he's definitely not seeing year four. And a decent amount of cap savings come with cutting a player that has a contract like that. So, you know, just remember that. Like, a lot of these 3, 4, 5 year deals, if the guy sucks and he doesn't deliver, it's almost always a 2 year deal, a 3 year deal.
Yeah, and especially the Saints have almost $30 million of cap space, right?
Yeah.
So they can go.
I mean, it's like Fleener. Let's be honest. Fleener's never seen the end of his contract.
No. I mean, he'll be lucky to get to year three, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, but at least with the Fairley conversation, at least we're having this conversation of they need to re-sign him because he was good. You know, we hope.
Yeah,
I mean,
when's the last time the Saints signed a free agent and we were like, "That man, that was a home run signing," especially on the defensive side of the ball.
It's
been a while.
He was a home run. Like, he exceeded my expectations wildly. I figured he would just be a guy, and I was going to be happy with that. But he's been so much better. I'm trying to think of a guy the Saints signed. Who did the Saints have last? They had a
Darren Sharper.
No. A defensive tackle signing in the last three or 4 years that was kind of – they haven't had any. They had a guy in a one-year deal. But Sharper was the last one, and that's getting a long time ago, Dave.
I mean, Keenan Lewis was a good pickup, I guess.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Keenan Lewis, he did not get signed by any team the whole year.
Yeah, but he said something on Instagram that he's committed, and he said he can't officially announce it till training camp next year or something. But, I mean, it sounds like he's got some commitment somewhere. I mean, honestly, I mean, I don't know how burnt that bridge is. I think it's pretty burnt, but I bring him back to Saints camp, man, as far as I'm concerned.
That is not happening. I would bet you that the Saints will get 3 first-round picks for Sean Payton in a trade to the Rams before Keenan Lewis will be
and
back.
They don't even have
the picks. Like, it would have to be like 2018, 2019, and 2020 picks, and that ain't happening.
Yeah, fair enough.
So before we get to Twitter questions and Atlanta game, Dave, what's your sense of, are the 2016 Saints better than the 2014-15 Saints?
Yeah, I guess I would say that. You know, they have a chance to go 8-8. So I think, as far as record is concerned, I think more importantly, I think the feeling that I'm getting is kind of what we touched on earlier, that they seem to be heading in the right direction. There's a lot more. I feel a lot more optimistic about next season than I did any of those other 7-9 seasons. So I think that's the major vibe that I've got right now as a Saints fan.
Andrew, how are your grades compared to the previous 2 years? As far as, are the grades like up? Is like a team GPA?
Yeah, defensively they're up significantly. Yeah, I think Breeze's numbers are a little bit down. Maybe, yeah, he was so bad in a couple games that kind of weights his grade down a little bit, but. No, overall, it's much higher. I mean, again, for me, look, they're 7-8. They've killed themselves in 3 games of special teams this year. And special teams, by the way, is operating at a much higher level right now. I'm feeling really good about Will Lutz being the kicker next year. I mean, I think he's made his last 20-something kicks in a row for field goals and extra points. And I mean, if you look at his kicks, it's not a fluke. I mean, you can tell he's getting the kicks higher. He's getting better lift and trajectory. So they've kind of
amazing
fixed
what some
Lutz.
Good coaching can do.
Yeah. So I mean, I think Lutz is looking good. And you know, I had a chance to ask him a question that I posted on Twitter, and Lutz talked about O'Day and being his special teams coach, and he basically said that O'Day, he told me that O'Day's job is to look at every single kick and track every single kick that he does, and they go over and watch it one by one, and he kind of gives him an explanation of, okay, here's what you did here, here's what you should do here, and it's like another set of eyes, and it's gotten so detailed that it's really paid off for him. And so I'm really glad that the Saints went with this move, and at the time, I think we all felt like this is such a lame move, and it's like a way for them not to fire Greg McMahon in the middle of the year. But that hire ended up being a good one. I feel like the team benefited really positively from that hire. And, you know, so you asked the question to Dave, like, is this team better than last year's team? I would say at times during the season, you know, with the kicking problems especially, I would say that they're the same. Because they're weighted down so much by special teams. But the way Will Lutz is kicking now and the way the defense is playing, no question they're a better team.
Yeah, I felt like in 2014 and 2015 that the defense was hopeless. Like, you woke up every Sunday and you were like, Saints better score 35. And Drew Brees better be phenomenal. Because this defense, not only is it terrible and awful and historically bad, like, there's no hope. And not only that, there wasn't even hope of, like, they're going to fall ass backwards into turnovers, because they were so bad against the run that teams just jammed it down their throat. And when you can hand off every play, the turnovers become less and less likely. So there was no hope. I've never felt that this defense is still bad, but it's never felt hopeless because they're top 10 against the run. So teams can't jam the ball down their throat. So I always felt like they can get to third down, and yeah, they kind of suck on third and long, which is weird. But if you can get to third and more than 5, you got a shot, because then you can pass rush, you can create a turnover.
Yeah, teams get one-dimensional, they're like, okay, it's time to start running clock because we're up two scores in the fourth quarter. The Saints were getting a lot of three and outs because they were stopping the run, and so they would give the offense more chances.
Yeah. Dave, what's your most memorable moment of 2016? You can give a couple of them, but what's your two most memorable moments from the season?
Oh, shit. I didn't know you were going to ask this. Oh, I got to think about this.
Well, I'll give mine and you can think about it. I'll give my two.
Yeah.
Do we have to give like singular moments or can we talk more general?
You can talk general or whatever. My two defining moments are, for whatever reason, when the Saints were leading Denver and Michael Thomas fumbled. That just, more so than the blocked extra point and all the rest of it, because the Saints had got to they got to 4-4. They were leading Denver, and they were on the march. And if they score again and get up two scores, they would have eaten Simeon alive, and that game would have been different. I don't know that the whole season would have been different because their special teams were still atrocious. But that moment just sticks in my mind because the Saints, like, they were geared up. They were playing a great defense at Denver. They were moving the ball. Drew Brees had gotten hot. They were going to go up two scores, and he fumbled, and and the second moment is the Raiders, man, the Raiders game. You're up 14 points at home in the season opener. You got to close that son of a bitch out. And those were my...
So both of your memorable moments are bad.
Are bad. And that's just...
I was trying to think a little bit more positively than that.
And my third moment... San Diego was the most blissful, miracle comeback Saints win I've ever witnessed.
Yeah, and that those was fun.
That was my third memory. Seriously, that's the gold standard by all crazy Saints comebacks will be measured against from time memoriam. So those were my memories.
Yeah.
So I
would say, well, the Raiders game, I would say more specifically, I just think that two-point conversion after they scored to win the game was kind of a microcosm of the season, you know. And we went in with that stat, and I told you that in the Sean Payton era, the Saints make the playoffs 80% of the time when they win week one. And when they lose week one, they make it 20% of the time. And so right there in week one, I mean, I remember watching that game, watching that play happen, and thinking to myself, well, there goes the season. And, you know, obviously you have 15 games to play, and it's not like it was a foregone conclusion. But I remember thinking, you know, hey, this is something that's going to go back to haunt them. And, you know, if the Saints were sitting at 8-7 right now, they'd still have something to play for. So I think that play, that two-point conversion, but also the Will Lutz blocks that were run back. And, you know, when you look at those plays, those were mistakes made by undrafted rookies. You know, Ken Crawley was the guy in coverage against Crabtree on that two-point conversion. Mm-hmm. And Will Lutz, you know, the rookie kicker, undrafted. So, you know, I think when in critical times, critical plays, you know, the Saints were relying on undrafted rookies with very little experience. And that's what's going to happen. And so I think, unfortunately, the Saints kind of took some lumps this year by trusting guys like that when the game was on the line. And I'm hoping that will benefit them next year when they get a little bit better of a roster. Mm-hmm. You know, Lutz, you know, like I said, Lutz has kind of taken his lumps this year, but he's really developed nicely, and I think that's going to serve him well going into next year, where I think he'll be a much more reliable kicker, hopefully. But... you know, I think on a positive note, probably the best win for me, and the San Diego game was fun, but for me it was beating the Panthers. And it coming down to that field goal, 41-38, really reminiscent for me of the Saints-Giants game the year before.
Yeah.
Where Brees threw 7 touchdowns. I mean, it felt very similar to that, and then Lutz made the kick at the end. And it was just a big middle finger to Cam Newton and how sour he was.
He was sour.
So that was probably the most fun moment.
Andrew just sparked my memory for my moment, because I had totally forgotten. Well, my best my worst moment, I think, was the Denver blocking that extra point and returning it. I think that was probably the worst. My best was bringing my son to the Panthers game and him really enjoying it and the Saints winning on a last second field goal and keeping it interesting for him all the way through the whole game and kind of giving us a moment together to cheer and celebrate. That was definitely my favorite moment of the season.
The win over Seattle was pretty fun too.
Yeah, the afterness of Seattle's tears were delicious.
Yes.
Yeah, stunting on Greg Williams was fun too.
Could I forget that? That's the peak. That's the peak moment.
Yeah, that is. That's it.
The peak moment.
All about that. Yeah. The moment they played Lion King over the loud speakers in the dome
was the
zenith of the 2016 Saints season.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
That was it.
Yeah. And then it all crashed. It literally the next week it crashed. It crashed down to the bottom against
Detroit.
That's
about right.
All right. So we have a ton of Twitter questions. So this is fun. This is from Gabe, Dave. Better accuracy, Jameis Winston or Stormtroopers?
Winston, he reminds me of Newton. They both miss their marks quite a bit. I guess Stormtroopers are better.
I'm hoping that Jameis Winston, like, this is as good as he's going to be, and he's just always going to be this inconsistent. He's like the Black Jay Cutler. Like, that's what I hope he's going to end up being.
I could see him having a Josh Freeman-like collapse.
Oh, that would be delightful, just because they're in the division. This is from Robert Andrew. Can the Saints continue the revenge run? Settled scores against San Francisco, Seattle, L.A., Greg Williams, Carolina, San Diego. That was for Breeze, and Arizona for Hightower. And Robert, we'll get to that when we do predictions. Here's one for this is from obnoxious.
Nate's 2-par pick six against the Falcons.
That would be it. More memorable, Andrew, Peyton second lining through Greg Williams D or every blocked Will Lutz field goal?
I try to be glass half full. They're both equally memorable to me. They're both kind of like if you talk about the peaks and valleys of the season, and you know this season hasn't been great, so I think you have to accept that there were bad moments. If you were to tell me the worst, I would say it's those blocks, too many of them, and constantly being run back for scores. I would say they're equal.
Yeah. Dave, who is the most overrated and underrated players besides Breeze on the Saints roster?
Most overrated and underrated?
Yeah.
Most underrated, I'm going to go to like Max Unger, probably. We never talk about him. Goes there, does his job, does it well. Overrated? I'm going to have to say...
I have mine for overrated.
I don't know.
I have mine for overrated, and I feel like I'm going to say it, Andrew's going to jump down my throat. Teron Armstead, and here's why. Andrew, what did we say in the preseason about the Saints offense, about the team in general? We said
that it'll live and die with Armstead.
Yes, and he missed 11 games, and the games he played in, he didn't play that well because he was hurt. And the offensive line survived and was okay. You know?
I think that's actually fair. Yeah, you know, I mean, I like Armstead a lot, and I'm still hopeful that he'll come back and be great next year. But I don't think that's unreasonable to say at this point he's overrated.
Yeah,
he's not. I mean, he's not healthy enough to live up to his billing. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see.
And like you said, it's not like they couldn't survive without him. They kind of did offensively.
If we could lose to Atlanta and guarantee getting a top defensive end for
Hold on. I want to say my guys.
Okay, go ahead.
I would say the most overrated player would be Delvin Bro.
And I think it's tough. I mean, he's been so injured. I mean, he broke his leg, for crying out loud. But yeah, even last year was kind of his first year. And I mean, so many people on so many Saints Twitter people are like, top five corner. He gave up a lot of touchdowns last year. He gives up a lot. He's pretty handsy. He gets flagged a lot. I'm not even dogging on Delvin Bro. I think he's a great corner. I'm glad he's on the team.
He's a top.
I hope he gets healthy. But let's not act like Delvin Bro is, you know, Revis in his prime.
No, he's
not.
He's a top 20 corner in the NFL.
Yeah, and no better. Yeah, that's
and
so I like Bro again. Like and the story's amazing, but I just think Saints Twitter way overrates Delvin Bro.
I think people are going to be surprised. I think the Saints are going to go big for a big time corner, and I hope they get it. I hope they get it right. But they're going to go. I think they're going to spend big.
I would say most underrated is Jairus Byrd, and I say that because I feel like the first 2 years were awful, and I think, you know, when you attribute his contract and the lack of production and the injuries, Saints fans hate him, and they have a right to. It's justified, I would have said this before the interceptions. I think the interceptions were just like, okay, finally he's playing at the level we all expected him to play, and finally he's delivering on that contract. Too little, too late. But I do feel like these last 6-7 weeks, and there was, you know, a lot of documentation around by media, but he's playing well.
I think it was the second interception where he anticipated the throw, jumped it, and made the pick, and you were like, that's why they gave him $54 million. Like,
yeah,
that's the Bird that we thought
we'd
be getting for 3 years.
I feel like the light's finally coming on for him a little bit. You know,
and I think
he's finally healthy, and you know, he's starting to benefit from consistent play. You know, the turnovers are starting to come.
I feel like with Bird, it's like the previous 3 years are sunk cost. I hate for the Saints to eject. I just keep him one more year and don't try to worry about saving a little bit of cap room, because they have a ton of cap space. Mickey Loomis, with $30 million of space, he doesn't need any more. Like, he doesn't have to. I feel like they don't have to carve and cut to make room. You know.
I'm looking forward to seeing how he does this weekend with a little confidence.
Yeah, they need him because Atlanta. We'll get to Atlanta in a second. This is from Barry. Is middle linebacker a legit concern, Dave, going forward, or can they scrape by with Craig Robertson and Stephon Anthony?
No, I mean, I think you really want a solid leader in there, a regular guy. and they've always tried to have a veteran presence there in the middle, but I don't know whether Craig Robertson's that guy. I could see them going after somebody in free agency, just like they did with Laurinaitis and Lofton and Vilma. I mean, all those guys were signed in free agency.
So here's a question from: what positions would you like to address in free agency and positions draft, Robert? If I'm Mickey Loomis, and I know this is going to drive Saints Twitter absolutely insane because of the bad luck the Saints have had with Buffalo Bills, but I'm signing Stephen Gilmore for Buffalo, the corner, and I'm re-signing Fairley, and I'm giving JPP from the Giants because he's injured this year, but he had 6 sacks and he's got one good arm. I'm signing him to a heavy incentive laden 1 year deal, and I'm signing Zietler from Cincinnati for my guard, or Leary, and then in the draft I'm taking defensive ends and linebackers and filling out the rest.
I mean, Ralph's wet dream would be a one-armed defensive player.
It would be. Like,
yeah.
It would be.
You could identify with
I could identify with them. I could buy the I could buy the club glove that he has. And I could tweet it during the game day. I could have the JPP jersey. Like, it is my dream. And he would be good, I think, on like a 1 year deal. Like,
I mean, how
the Saints
great
haven't
of a,
done that
I mean,
bad.
Come on. His name is Jason Pierre-Paul. It's like tailor made to be a Saints player.
It is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We said that about Stanley Jean-Baptiste, too.
True.
Look, the Saints haven't done that poorly in Buffalo. They got Jabari Greer came from Buffalo.
Yeah, this
he
is
worked out.
That's true. This is from JJ K Bone. All the people that listed their Twitter most memorable moment of the season, this was my favorite. My most memorable moment was watching Rob Ryan and Rex Ryan with the Bills put 10 men on the field to lose against the Dolphins. That was awesome, and it was the most Ryan thing ever. Like, they literally, they had 10 guys, and Jay Ajayi, he went, like, for 60. Which is, you know? And I was just happy that it wasn't the Saints. So that does the question. So now we got to get to Atlanta. So Atlanta is a 6.5-point favorite. As many of you know, Atlanta, they win, they get the second seed, and they get a bye. If they lose, they could fall as far down as the sixth seed.
Really?
I'm not the sixth, the fourth seed. They could be as low as the fourth seed.
Right. So either way, they're going to get
another
home playoff
another
game.
Home game. But I mean,
so this isn't going to be the last game.
But I mean, if they're the fourth seed, they might get Green Bay at home, and they have to go to Dallas right. the second week. If they're the second seed, you probably get Seattle at home, and Seattle's dreadful on the road, and their offensive line is garbage, and they have Vic Beasley who's tearing it up. I mean, like, it's a huge difference. Obviously. So,
yeah.
Dave, Atlanta favored by 6.5. Who you got?
If I was a betting man, I would definitely take the Saints in the points. It sucks that we don't get to play them in potentially the last game in the Georgia Dome and close it out with a loss. But look, forget the whole draft position thing, 7-9, 8-8, that you're not talking about a huge, you know, change in draft position.
It could be as high as 9 or as low as 18. I would argue that nine spots in the draft is pretty significant.
It's a big ass swing. So this is gonna.
It depends on a lot of other games too, but it does, and it's not that important because the Saints are terrible at drafting anyway, so it doesn't really matter. It is certainly not worth rooting against the Saints on Sunday. We definitely want to beat the Falcons. It's the Saints' last time in the Georgia Dome. We want to definitely go out with a bang there. And of course, anything the Saints can do to screw the Falcons, you know, yes. whether it's take away home field yeah. advantage or
we can't let them sweep us. We can't let the Falcons sweep
us.
The one thing
we can hold over Atlanta's head is the Saints have a Super Bowl win and you don't. And the NFC, I know Dallas is rolling tonight, but I feel like the NFC is wide open and I don't want to give Atlanta a decent chance to get to the Super Bowl. And having a bye, whenever you have a bye, you always have a decent shot to get to the Super Bowl. So I don't want that to happen. But Dave, continue.
I think we're all on the same page. That's good. It's just a question of now whether what do we think is actually going to happen. Now that we've decided what we want to happen,
we need to actually discuss what we think
is going to happen. I think the Saints are going to win. I really do. Normally, if this was any other team but the Falcons, I would say, they're going to lose. But I think they're going to win. And I'm going to say, I think they're going to win big time. And everybody's going to question the Falcons. Everybody's going to question the Falcons. They're going to be like, oh, the Falcons are going to just, you know, put up 2 points again in their playoff game.
That would be delightful.
So I'm gonna say Saints 38, Falcons 20.
That would be
Saints 38, Falcons 20.
You couldn't go into an off season without making the playoffs feeling any better if that happened.
Right.
Like, seriously.
Yeah, yeah. We'll all be. Yeah.
So who's the MVP?
Yeah. I am going to say it's going to be somebody on the defense if we're keeping the Falcons to 20 points. I'm going to say BWF.
BWF.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
So, Andrew, yeah. Who you got?
Yeah, I mean, listen, forget the draft pick. First of all, a little part of me wants to go 8-8 because it's a little better than the last 2 years, 7-9. Can't let the Falcons sweep you. Last game in the Georgia Dome, rivalry, all that stuff. This is our Super Bowl this year. And listen, maybe it's the kid that grew up in the 80s and as a Saints fan my whole life and watched the Saints and Falcons battle for
let me say one
last
thing.
Place in the NFC West when the Rams, it was a foregone conclusion that the 49ers and Rams were going to be 1-2.
Yeah.
But, like, playing the Falcons when I was a kid growing up, like, we weren't
everything,
making the
playoffs. Making
the playoffs wasn't an option.
No, and, like, 30,000 Saints fans would go to Fulton County even when the Saints were, like, 4-9.
Yeah, because making the playoffs, there was no hope of that. And, you know, winning a Super Bowl, forget it. So the Falcons
was
our Super Bowl every time we played them. And so there's a little bit of residual from that. And me as a kid growing up, like, you know, oh, yeah, you know, the Cowboys and the 49ers and the Redskins, like, they get to go play in this cool thing called the Super Bowl. But
we have to,
you know, when we play the Falcons, that's what it boils down to for us. So no question, I want to win. What happens? The Falcons are better than the Saints. And I know the stats say the Saints are 1 on offense and the Falcons are 2. But I think the Falcons have more weapons. And I just think Julio Jones is dominant. And Matt Ryan has done a really terrific job all year of spreading it around. This is the best season Matt Ryan's ever had. Devontae Freeman is terrifying. I just think the Falcons, they're a better team. They need this game badly. They want to try to get that bye, and I think they are going to crush the Saints. And I think the Saints will play like it's their Super Bowl, so I expect the offense to have some moments and keep it interesting for a while. But kind of similar to the game in New Orleans, I think the Saints will have no answer for that offense, and the Falcons will kind of pull away late in the second half. I think it's going to be another one of those kind of like 45-31 Falcons wins. They're just the better team, and that's why they're going to the playoffs and the Saints are staying at home.
So who's the least valuable player then of the Saints?
Yeah, I just think the secondary is going to get torched. Yes. So I will say that Sterling Moore will bear the brunt of it.
I'm going to say, and let me just say, if the NFL was smart, they would realize all these games that are rivalry games, like the Saints, Dallas, or whoever, or Dallas and Washington. The Saints and Atlanta should start every year and end every year playing each other. It just makes the season more fun. If the Saints were 7-8 and playing Tampa or playing Carolina, we wouldn't care nearly as much. But when they end with Atlanta, it just makes you care, no matter what's going on. And I love that. And I just wish the NFL would, every year, they could end with Atlanta. I'm with you, Andrew. The Saints secondary is awful. And they've patched it together and it's been wonderful. Dennis Allen, they've done some great things. But Atlanta, that first game, the Saints, they went down and scored and they fumbled the punt. And we feel like, oh, that set it all awry. I don't think it would have mattered. Like, Atlanta is going to light up the Saints, but I think it's going to be closer than you think. I'm going to take the 6.5. I'm going to say the Saints are going to jump out to a pretty big lead because Matt Ryan's going to have a pretty bad first half, but Atlanta is going to come roaring back, and it's going to end just like the Raiders game did. It's going to be Falcons 43, Saints 42. Atlanta's going to go for 2 at the end of the game and get it and win. And it'll be a nice, horrible bookend to the 2016 Saints season. So 43-42 Atlanta. So take the Saints and take the over and thank me later. So that's my prediction. So Kevin, of course, couldn't join us tonight. So that about wraps it up. Andrew, of course, he's got his grades up. I saw you had offensive grades. Do you have the defensive grades up now?
Yeah, everything's up.
Oh, everything's up. So go there. Dave's on the Twitters. We got one last week of football. You got LSU Saturday and the Saints on Sunday, and then you got to wait 8 more months for football. So just soak it in, enjoy it, drink, eat, get crazy. I don't know what to tell you. So until next week when we wrap this whole thing up, be well, because the bar is closed.